We've done work with some of the Jungians. There's a Guild for Psychological Studies in the San Francisco Bay Area and the Jung Institute there. And one summer we went to the Mecca, Zurich, Switzerland, where Jung held forth for many years. And that was a real positive or great trip. We also took a bus journey through places where he lived. His father was a pastor, and some of the experiences that are recorded in his memoirs, dreams, and reflections that tell us pretty much a biographical statement, beginning with some of his very first dreams and experiences as a small child and a youngster growing up in a parsonage and with the church and the church of that time, and the impressions that made on him, and the Protestant and the Catholic traditions in Switzerland, and the priests robed in black. There's one vivid memory where the men in black came and they buried a body into the ground. And of course that was a pretty scary experience for him as a youngster. So the symbol surrounding the man robed in black was a major one. I think that is sort of sufficient, maybe, with the broader background. Now for the tape ministry, we'll say that we'll begin. I can put the recorder on. This will be the first session in Dreams, Myth, and Personal Growth, and first session being Understanding Our Dreams. Well, I'd like to, instead of maybe take your time to get in your names and quite it that way, how about responses about your own dreaming? How many are aware of their dreams, you know, that you dream from time to time? Not everybody recalls their dreams. Are there a few that haven't? I was talking with a woman. We have a little retreat place up on the coast, and she didn't remember a single dream through her life. She was maybe in her 70s, and She was very oriented to the outer and very active kind of person, but just not in touch with dreams. But she'd also not made an effort to remember dreams. So that, too, if you say to yourself, I'd like to remember, and really with some intention, putting a notebook and a pencil by your bed, your unconscious or the psyche will cooperate and will help you in recalling dreams. How many have had repeat dreams? Okay. So that you have a theme that keeps repeating. That's something we'll get into in one of our sessions in particular. How many record dreams so that you kind of, from time to time, look back at them and review them? I imagine many discuss your dreams with someone. How many discuss them? Okay, yeah. And I suppose the very fact that you're here kind of is an indication that you value your dreams and that they've been helpful to you. All right. I'd like just to briefly, and maybe this will be repetitious for some of you, that you maybe know about the dream process and its function, but let's emphasize it once again and have any discussion too around that or clarification. That maybe to start off with, in one sense, sleep is an altered state of consciousness, at least the dream process that goes on during sleep is an altered state of consciousness. Sometimes we've, in the past decades, we've heard a lot about altered states of consciousness, of meditation, and people sometimes getting high on drugs. And in the early 60s, when drugs were not so abused, sometimes people had very positive, kind of quotes, religious-like experiences from a drug experience. And there was a lot of data then on altered states of consciousness. Of course, meditation, prayer, deep prayer is where one gets in a centered place, is a way of entering into an altered state of consciousness. But I think of dream experience or dream life as an altered state and another level of intelligence, and therefore a resource for us. And because it has its own language, most people don't tune into it that well. It's sort of like, if you're strictly English speaking, as if your dream life were in Spanish, and you can't make any sense out of it. And of course, and that is, the dream does have its own language of symbol and archetypal images. So we have to learn all about them. And the more broader experience we get, the more we're able to interpret and understand our dreams. Now, coming kind of back to the dream process and sleep, I just diagram briefly that the dream, when we do go to sleep, we go through cycles, about 5 to 7 cycles of a first level of sleep that is not terribly deep. And a sort of a twilight zone. And then you go into a second phase, and that is what was referred to as REM sleep, rapid eye movement, so that the eyes flicker during the REM sleep. And during that period, you are dreaming. They have put people in the sleep laboratories, and they've awakened them, and they found that they were dreaming. And one of the things that happens, too, is that so that you don't start, if you're in a kind of running dream, violent dream, active dream, your body is essentially kind of paralyzed. There's something from the brain that sort of blocks action to the muscles, and so that if you started swinging wildly, your arms just don't move. I understand that when people have been awakened in the dream, they experience that paralysis. They're suddenly pulled out of this sleep, and they still feel some of the immobility of their muscles. So this REM period can be anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes. It can be a fairly long time. And as I said, this, and of course then it goes on into a deeper level, which the way I've heard it described is that you're just really not aware. It's like no recall, maybe the brain drops into another, maybe more relaxed place where it rests, possibly, that there's no recall from that level. Also, the brain waves change so that they are also able to detect these levels of sleep by the brain waves. So it's pretty well documented that this dream process is very important to our health and to kind of the self-regulating, self-balancing dimensions of the psyche. Also, When I was doing an internship in Boston City Hospital, I worked on the alcoholic ward, and there would be persons who'd come in and they had the DTs. They'd been on a long alcoholic binge. They came in to dry, or brought in to dry out, and as they dried out, they had hallucinations and visions and trances going on, and they were kind of scared and a little crazy. Well, alcohol suppresses the dream process. So that if a person's been on heavy alcohol drinking for a long time, or a week, 2 weeks, that dream process has been stopped or slowed way down and affected. So then as a person comes back to normal, what is, you know, the explanation is that then the dream process begins to reassert itself. And this person is probably in a highly awakened state as they're coming, you know, they're restless, they're not sleeping that well. So they begin to see their dreams, you might say, as they come back to a more normal state. So that again sort of verifies how important dreams are to our health, and that it's an important part of the rhythm of our body and psyche. Another interesting dimension is that infants dream many, many more hours than we do. They sleep many more hours than we do. And you can, you know, if you place yourself back into infancy or childhood, just think of the impact of all the new experiences that are coming across to them. You know, they can be crawling along on the carpet and stop and look at a little something, and or they can put it in their mouth and taste something. And they might be carried to the supermarket by their mother, and they're on the back, and they're being carried, and they're seeing all these shelves and all these things. I mean, the visual impact, people going by, going out into the street, to the car, being strapped up into a carrier, and then the car zipping off and down the street, and the trees going by. All that visual, no words to identify this stuff. And so the child or the infant has many experiences to process, and so many hours of sleep are kind of necessary. Well, that's the kind of the basic part I want to emphasize about the importance of the dream process. I'm sure if there's any discussion or questions around that, or something that somebody might want to add, yes.
What about if you're dreaming while you're in REM, and if while you're in REM you're sort of paralyzed? When would a person sleepwalk and dream?
I understand that it is not in REM that that the sleepwalking occurs. And now whether it is in that upper level or another lower level, but it is not during the dream state that people do the sleepwalking. I just was reviewing some. I ran across some of that today. I think too there are times where I have heard reported though that someone has dreamed and they swung wildly or something and thrashed around in the bed. You know, it could be at times that someone's mechanism is not fully working and is not paralyzing sufficiently all of their bodily movements, so that they, you know, do some moving around. And I'm sure we've all even experienced sort of restlessness in bed. Of course, we may not know just when and what part of the sleep it occurred.
Yeah,
Any other, yes?
Our daughter was diagnosed with narcolepsy and cataplexy. Part of her problem beforehand, and still is, she goes into REM sleep immediately. Her REM sleep is at the earliest part of falling asleep. And vivid dreams is one of the symptoms of narcolepsy, so that when you ever do wake up, you're exhausted.
Uh-huh.
It's like you're living your dream.
Uh-huh.
If you're running, you physically are in your brain.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so she doesn't get a breather in the way from the REM sleep.
No, because she went to sleep laboratories, and REM sleep occurs the minute you're asleep.
Uh-huh.
You don't go through this preliminary.
Uh-huh.
Thing.
Well, thank you. That's good to
hear. But those are sleeping disorders, which isn't really why we're here.
Yeah.
But
it does tell us a little bit about, and you know, a dreams can demand a lot of energy from us. And if we have something going on in our outer life that is quite stressful, conflictual, then we're going to be dreaming quite a bit that evening. And in a sense, it compensates. Maybe that the dream life is compensatory, or the psyche has a compensatory principle. And it may be possible that as you've been wrestling with that conflictual situation, you have kind of kept a lid on it. You've tried to stay in control. You have not let your emotions get out of hand, so to speak. And in the process, you have suppressed a good deal of your energy, or not sure just where it is affecting you in terms of some of your own family of origin. So in the dream begins to process it. It brings up many levels. It may bring up something about the outer situation, but it also may also symbolize something from your childhood experiences, and in terms also be very emotional. Yes?
I'd like to ask your opinion. What do you think of a dream that has a lot of detail in it, and you wake up and you remember that detail because it seemed important, and that very day that dream happened exactly like that happened to me when I was a high school girl, and it scared me so much. Not that it was a violent dream, it was a fun dream about high school, you know, and a football game.
Mm-hmm.
But it scared me so, because for years after, every time I dreamed, and if it was a bad dream, like somebody died,
uh-huh.
I was frightened that dream
sure.
was going to
sure.
actually come true, because the first one was so graphic.
Yeah.
What? How do you explain that? What happened?
Well, it sounds like the dream from your youth was one in which the psyche saw what was going to transpire. You know, I mean, it had a real sense and intuition, and was able to portray it. Huh?
How can we see the future in a dream?
Well, I think you're illustrating the difference between your conscious awareness and the awareness, a larger awareness of the psyche. So you are taking in much more data than you can possibly keep consciously processing. So your psyche is well, we can maybe compare it to a computer, but you're loading your computer. It's getting, it's got many, many disks of information. And so it can process that and present a scenario. And I think maybe if you had had someone to discuss it with that had some understanding, they may have been, certainly would have made you feel more comfortable about that dream. There's another dimension about detail, and that doesn't sound like it's related to your dream. But sometimes detail may be a way of obscuring the major theme of the story. And so it may be saying something about your a defensiveness by putting a whole lot of detail. So it's sort of like confusing detail. And if you'll strip away some of the detail and take the major story of the dream, you probably will get more to the heart of the dream. But your dream didn't sound quite like that.
No, you know,
yours sounded like it was saying something about what was up ahead for
you. It was strange. I'll share it just really, really quickly.
Uh-huh.
I was a very young girl. I entered high school way too young because of skipping too many grades. As a result, my mother didn't let me do very much socially because I was immature.
Uh-huh.
And there was a football game being played by Beverly Hills High School down in San Diego, which the whole school that was going by train. And I was so excited that my mother was going to let me do this, that I guess, you see, that was on my mind. I was just totally excited when I went to bed that night to think that I could go. But in my dream, I missed the train. And I have to ride down to San Diego in a car. Of course, my mother was scared to death to let me ride with young high school boys. But I ride in this car with one of the football players and one of the coaches with the football because I missed it. Then the football game went on, and then I dreamed coming home in the train. Do you know my last class in high school, I was detained by the teacher for something. By the time I got out to where they were taking us by bus to the train, the bus had gone. And there was a young chap there with a little convertible Ford. And he was the boy with the football and the coach. And they saw me standing there with tears in my eyes, and they put me in the car and they took me and they drove me to San Diego. Now that was a lot of detail, and you know that really frightened me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even enjoy the drive at all. that was something that all the girls were jealous of, but I didn't even enjoy.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Now that's weird.
Well, it's not so weird. I mean, there is a tension between you and your mother, and she's been scaring you some, and maybe you are scared some yourself, you know. So you dream that you missed the train, which would relieve you in some ways of the going to this game. But it turns around, though, that you do get picked up and taken, and you get your wish. I mean, at another level, you also would like to be treated like a more adult teenager, you know, more adult-like. And so here you do, you get to go with the coach and the young man and so on. And I mean,
could you have missed almost subconsciously missed it on purpose?
I think that's certainly a theme of it. You unconsciously could miss it on purpose.
Well, I had known he was going to be there.
Yeah, I
did. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
It might say something about a fear you felt.
Yeah.
You're saying your mother wouldn't let you go, but something in you did probably might not have felt ready either.
Uh-huh.
Did you feel always like the youngest kid in the class?
Oh, sure.
Those are things
to
ask yourself.
Yeah. There's another. Yes?
Back in 1938, we were living in Tacoma, and I had a dream that I was out in the park with my mother, and all of a sudden she was in an upper level. It was just beautiful up there. She called down and said, "You can't come up here now." Well, a few weeks later, we had a call from home that mother passed away. Well, I thought, well, the Lord was trying to tell me something. That's the way I felt about it. When I thought back about that dream, I thought, the Lord must have been trying to tell me something that I didn't understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was very real. I might want to just comment on the symbol of death, because, you know, later you were scared by dreaming about death. And death doesn't always have to mean the literal thing. Death is a symbol for separation. So it could be that in growing up, there may be to be a death, a separation, and it might be symbolized in something dying or a person dying. that has to die to you so that you can become an adult, we'll say, in your own right. So, there was, Marilyn, did you?
Oh, yes, I was just wondering if you distinguish between vision and dream.
You were going to what?
I was wondering if you distinguish between vision and dream, whether you have any comment listening to these comments.
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on the source. Now, like in the scriptures, there are references to trances or a vision. And a lot of times I think those may well be references to dreams.
Like, you know, Paul had a vision to go to Macedonia,
yeah,
which I was just teaching.
Yeah.
And, you know, is
yeah,
a dream.
Yeah,
or,
yeah. Paul was...
That, you know, would that be in our language a dream? That we?
I think that was a dream. Well, though, it was a very powerful dream that maybe was like a hallucination. You know, I mean, he visually saw something. It was so powerful in his life that it just stopped him and blinded him. You know, I mean, we want to remember that Paul was a Pharisee and that he was in some ways, a kind of rigid person. And one of his, in that dream, or a vision, Jesus says, "Paul, Paul, why are you persecuting me? Why do you kick against the goad, or why do you kick against the prick?" And that is a stick with a sharp point that you use to prod a donkey. So if we take the symbolism of the dream, Paul is being a donkey. He's being a stubborn ass, you know. And he is persisting in persecuting the Christians. And of course he's taking in all what he sees and hears. He saw Stephen martyred, and he sees the love and the caring and the faith of these people. And there must have been a tremendous struggle going on in him. And so, I would see that this just broke through. And I would see his God working through his unconscious, you know, through his psyche, through, and to turn him around. And he was blinded for several, well, 3 days is the scripture. So I think the scriptures, even in the Old Testament, it says something like, the angel came and talked to me. Now some of those, a messenger, an angel, a messenger in the night. Again, this could well be a dream experience bringing a message of the Spirit of the Lord to this individual. So that's the way I see it. Any comment on that or discussion? Okay, now let's see, in terms of, I wanted to share a little bit about Peter's dream. And this one was a dream that occurred when he was praying. I don't know if you call it a dream then, it was a vision. And of course, at the time, there was this conflict about how we would include Gentiles in the church around dietary rules and circumcision. But particularly, you know, the Jews were called the circumcised, in a sense, and the uncircumcised people. And they didn't follow any of the dietary rules they had. So, can they be a part of the congregation without observing? So Peter had in his prayer, in his deep prayer, I would say a kind of altered state of awareness, that he saw a great sheet, four-cornered sheet, or in one translation says, a great sailcloth. He was a Peter. Peter was a fisherman, so I would think he saw a great four-cornered sailcloth lowered with all kinds of animals, reptiles, and various things in it. And it says, a voice says, slay and eat. And then he protests, says, I have never taken anything unclean into my mouth. And the voice, and it comes again, says it, and the voice said a third time. And then it says, do not ever call unclean what I have cleansed. And so here is a vision that helps to resolve Peter's conflict or sense of his direction. And I particularly want to bring out is that some of the symbolism again. You know, in the last one, Paul was being stubborn. Well, in this one, we see a four-cornered sheet or four-cornered sail. What would the four corners symbolize, maybe?
All parts of the world.
What?
All parts of the world.
Right, the four corners of the world. As it takes four legs for a chair, normally, and a table, and it makes for a very stable thing. So we have a stabilizing message that is all-inclusive about the animals that God has created, or his creation. It is good and clean. And so he might partake of it. And I'm not going to go into it so much now, but numbers have these sorts of values. Oh, in Paul's vision, there was a repetition of three times. Three is kind of a number of movement. It's not normally a kind of a stable number. We say two is company and three is a crowd. Also, three is a number of transition for change. And I think the Trinity is such a thing. It is a number that is a transition from the Old Testament times and to a new faith. But three is a number for change. So in Peter's message, that this was repeated three times. Driving home, of course, emphasizing, but also calling for change. Uh-huh. A number of verification, did you say? Uh-huh. So, good. Yeah, it's sort of getting awareness of the value of the symbols, because the dream language is in symbols, and in some of them are universal to us. Like, say, the number two, what would you associate with the number two?
Togetherness.
Okay, togetherness. It could be a pair that are together, as in marriage, or
duality.
And what, also enlarge on duality, what?
Something complementing each other.
Well, it could complement. Could it be the opposite too?
Yeah.
They could be opposing, okay? They can be opposing as well. So there can be polarity. So two is has its own kind of dimensions. It has a potential for coming together. It also has a potential for splitting apart. And polarity, or complementing, because they are opposites, shall we say. And we have male and female, and there is a complementary quality there. So two, you see, has its own uniqueness. And to move from two to three says something in terms, or from two to four, or so even like in a dream where there are four persons, two persons, three persons. You don't want to weight this too heavily, but usually there is some meaning in the numbers, and it can help to interpret the dream language. Well, let's see, in terms of time, so that we kind of cover what we need today. I think what I'll do is I'll jump to the recording thing and then come back to telling about a few fascinating dreams. One of them kind of humorous. We talked in the beginning briefly about taking time to put notebook and pencil down so that you have a positive intention, and you can even give yourself a positive message before going to sleep to remember your dreams. Some feel that the early morning dreams before waking are kind of the most directed to us. Although I think there are times when we are having heavy dream process going on, we may get wakened by a dream about 3 a.m. Now that is usually a very important dream, is saying something about what's going on with us. So catching a dream in the kind of the last hours of sleeping can often be very useful. And of course, withhold judgment on the dream. And usually, you know, the ego or our conscious self has some kind of reaction. And when the dream is a nightmare, or like a nightmare, or is something repugnant in it, distasteful, or some particular character in it is, then, you know, we want to reject it, and we think, oh, or we feel that that aspect is terrible or bad. So hold back your judgment. Just let it be. And the Lord's Prayer says something about let the thing be. Just accept it as is. And then record who and the what, the when, the where, the you don't have to have the why, the feelings that go along with the dream, the ending of the dream is important. And the action, because when you start describing what has happened, you're going to describe some of the action, the drama, the adversaries in the dreams. And even too, if you don't remember the dream clearly, that is a statement. You know, the dream itself may not be too clear. Yeah, I think I was, I'm not sure where I was. See what I've said? I'm not sure where I am. So there might be, the dream may be expressing something that has to do with something that's vague. You're in a place where you're not sure of the direction in which to go. So if the dream recall of it is that it's something vague about it, uncertain, take that in terms of literally, it's just that this is talking about something that you're uncertain about. And then usually you have some definite things that are in the dream that you may be uncertain about. Another dimension about where, a lot of times you may be taken up with what's immediately happening right in the foreground of the dream, and you may also need to pay attention to what the background of the dream is. And I was just trying to think of a good illustration of that. The one that comes to my mind right now may not be the best illustration, but at least maybe the background, of course, may identify the place, the landscape of where you are. Maybe another country, maybe a foreign culture. So that's going to make some statement. Also, it might take place in a room. There's a lot of activity going on, and one of the background things might be that the carpet has a unique color to it. And if you begin to identify with the carpet, it would be to get in touch with the background, you find that this activity is all going on top of the carpet. And in one dream, somebody who identified with the carpet, they said, hey, I'm feeling all walked on. You know, they got in touch with how much they were being walked over. So the background of the dream, or some seemingly inactive aspect of the dream, passive aspect of the dream, if you identify with it, helps you to get in touch with something. All parts of the dream can be parts of you. All aspects of the dream can be parts of you. And another way to it might be fragments of ourselves that we are not connected with. And by identifying and connecting with it and working with it, having a dialogue with that aspect, or become that aspect, you bring more of yourself together, so to speak. I think maybe a good illustration of this is this one of the dream. This dream, the dreamer lives in San Francisco. I don't know if some of you have been to Nob Hill and some of the many hills in San Francisco. I guess Seattle has a lot of high, steep hills as well. Well, some of them are very steep. And this man, a pastor there, a church on high up on one of the hills, and he had to go in for heart surgery, triple bypass. And of course, naturally, being very anxious about that, and he was in the hospital, I think, or just approaching that time of the surgery drawing near, maybe within a few days. He had a dream. Now, first I'd say too, this fellow is very humorous, has a quick wit, delightful, very quick verbally. And so he's real good in the pulpit, always works in a little humor. And he's old enough to have been as a youngster in what we used to call soapbox derbies. Those are little carts, you know, made from apple boxes, and kids would ride coast down the hill. So in his dream, he is riding down a steep San Francisco hill in a soapbox cart with no steering wheel. It's interesting, you know, a soapbox is something that a person can get up and talk, you know, stand up on your soapbox and spout off, and so it already carries that theme, because of him, and of the pulpit, but his healingness. So I think it was sort of the humor of it. Here he is with his soapbox cart, no steering wheel, and his quick wit probably isn't going to help him at this point, you know. And he's going down the steep hill, and up the other way is coming a huge truck. Wow. Now if you see you own that aspect of yourself, that's his work. He's pulling a big truck up the hill. I'm a big truck pulling a big load up the hill. And then here he's coming down in this car. And that's going to, will there be the end? And he has no control. But as he's going down the hill, he discovers that if he takes the right attitude, that is, he leans his body in an attitude, he can make the sharp turn. And as he comes down the hill, he finds as he leans, the cart just turns off and goes off on a side street, and it coasts off and down, and he's okay. Well, I think that dream released a lot of his anxiety. At the same time, it had a little sense of humor in it. And it also said the attitude was crucial to his survival, you know, to his coming through and a healing surgery. The other is that it was confronting him with his work attitude. Interesting, you know. So it has said more than just getting through the surgery. He's even being, the truck is coming right at him, so he's being confronted by his work ethic and the need to control and reduce that kind of a workload. The second dream that he had was that, and I thought, I'll just quick, this is a short one. He's flying in an aircraft. Of course, San Francisco is a major international airport. And as he's in, maybe he starts out in the pilot section and the cockpit. And the next thing, though, he is the airplane. He is the airplane. His body has become the airplane. And the task is to land the plane again. And so he's circling over San Francisco, and he does come down and manage to land the aircraft on a street in San Francisco. The plane becoming the body is a symbol of the surgery. And again, it was a dream that relieved some of his anxiety and gave him a positive hope and trust that he was going to come through the surgery okay, which he did. And still around to this very day. Over time. Well, I better start curtailing it there. We have some books that we like to mention about, and some printed mimeograph stuff here that duplicated that is on cracking dreams. We appreciate maybe a quarter on that. Ellie, would you maybe share something on the books?
This one is Dreams, A Way to Listen to God, and this is something that is dreams in the Bible. And that you may take. And then the Cracking Your Dreams is a real good example of how to work with your own dreams. If you really want to learn how to do that, and gives you some ideas of how you can do it for yourself. This is Techniques for Discovering the Creative Power in Dreams. I don't know that one.
Dreamwork. I know this person, Jeremy Taylor, and that's an excellent book. I would recommend.
This one is Healing the Eight Stages of Life. Now, behind that is the idea that most of us have stages in our life that are not healed because life has gone too fast, or something came up that we just didn't want to look at something that needed to be looked at. So this is talking about needing to be in a child stage, maybe when you're 30 or like that, and encourages people to do that, to really heal stages that are unhealed before you move on, and it makes the maturing process more healthy and happy. This one is Dreams, God's Forgotten Language. Again, he speaks of the power of dreams to assist you in your growth process. This one is transitions, and it's for any stage in life. We all have transitions from school to work, from childhood to marriage, from, and this is a real.
A change of a death or a divorce, retirement, change of vocation, you know, a lot of different kinds of transition. Ananda doesn't always think of it, but becoming a mother is a transition.
And this is strategies for,
you know,
coping.
First time to have a baby, and you know, married and baby, and how that changes your life. So that he touches on it.
This is one that I just give away and buy them by the dozen because it's an inspiring one of a story of a woman who lived her life, what she says, did what God wanted her to do. And where was it here? She walked 25,000 miles in a period of years for peace. And she talks about peace within and peace without. Maybe you've heard of Peace Pilgrim. She used to be on television. And it's this one you may have, or you may contribute a dollar for. And this is Steps Toward Inner Peace. This is her Peace Pilgrim. She has three statements she makes. One of them is overcoming evil with good and hatred with love. And she talks about harmonious living, and you must have inner peace before you can contribute to peace in the world. And one of the ways that you began to find inner peace is to simplify your life. And I think that's a very popular theme here, how to simplify our lives. So you may please feel welcome to take this, contribute a dollar if you like, but please take it and pass it on. You will really be inspired by it. So that's what we would recommend in terms of reading. Mm-hmm.
On this one, I want to mention that this is based on Eric Erickson's stages of life, you know, the development, child development, and adult life, and career, generativity, and so on. And so that uses those stages to look at healing the eight stages of life. Developed by Eric Erickson. And John Sanford's book, Dreams, God's Forgotten Language, this is a recommend. And these books are available in the bookstore here. And there are a few in the library here too. Not too many, but they have a good library, but I mean, number of volumes aren't going to go around. Let's see. Well, are there things that you might want to share, or a dream that you maybe wanted to talk about?
I dream, I'm sure. But when I wake up, I don't know if I dreamt. And if I did, I don't know what I dreamt about. Any meaning with something like that?
Can it what?
Is there any meaning to something like that, or is that just that I'm dumb?
Now, although if you might, what we said in terms of saying, you know, trying to give yourself a message of recalling or to remember your dreams, and you may find that you'll be remembering some part of your dream, even if you only get a small part of the dream, record it. It's sort of like developing a habit. And a readiness to receive it. The other, I find that people who have not so much been in tune with their dreams are often of a certain personality type. There is a Myers-Briggs introvert, extrovert, sensation, intuition, feeling, thinking, or perceiving and judging type. And usually people whose work has a lot been outward oriented and dealing with things, with a lot of focus and, you know, on those things, may not be so tuned in, are not connected with as many values in terms of, well, a more introspective, introverted aspect.
Or the feeling dimension.
So, I mean, that's a rough rule. Like I've someone who's been an accountant with a lot of interest in the detail and the physical. And I don't say that all accountants would be that way, well, but I've, you know, that might be a, or somebody who's a civil engineer working out on the roadways, building may be so more focused to the outer world that they're not really very much. And they may have an attitude about that inner world too.
Well, Roy, let's bring it back here. Because it's obviously you're not dumb. What is your outer work?
You mean what have I worked at? Uh-huh. I'm a landscape architect and retired real estate broker.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And my wife's, please do this, honey, being retired now.
But the other thing is the dream process is always going on, so it takes care of itself. And you know, you had a health, I gather you had a relatively healthy life, and you're here and retired and so on, that it has functioned for you. So it isn't as if you've got to be able to recall your dreams.
I have a question.
Yeah?
What about dreaming in color, like dreaming in black and white?
Oh, color in black and white? Well, color is, gives more vivid dimension to the dream. So usually it's saying that there's more energy, or there could be something symbolic in the color. Like actually the dream I was referring to about the carpet was red, and that had to do with the woman's sensuality. And the carpet was in a huge hotel, and there was kind of a mafia atmosphere to the place. So there was a lot of sinister and masculine, sinister people, and she was traipsing down this beautifully red carpeted hallway, okay. And, you know,
red. We have another question here.
So the color can mean several things, you know. Yes.
I thought I heard you say that the dream process is always going on. And at a previous session on dreams, I thought I heard a person say that you aren't always dreaming.
Well, no, I didn't mean to say it wrong. You go through a cycle where you don't dream, and then the REM part is where the dream part of this sleep cycle, then you're not dreaming, and this is a very deep sleep where you don't remember much and need the brain maybe resting, then it goes through another period of dreaming, and then rather light, you might wake up somewhere in here, and then go back down to sleep again. And this goes on for about 5 to 7 cycles during the night. And I guess one of these sections can be anywhere from 1.5 hours to 90 minutes long.
What I was really meaning is that some people were sharing that they didn't feel that they really did dream.
Right.
The explanation for was that they weren't struggling with any issues in their unconscious. That they were more at peace and therefore they were not dreaming.